Just no, not tonight. No, not just not to stop too long. Although it does get kind of interesting.
Frank, you got my undivided attention.
Well, thank you, Frank. So we find we were coming through here, and just for a little background, I like to do that is. We talked about it a little bit last week, is the characters, and as we go through from Genesis to where we are now, is just a stop. And I was thinking about this on the way over here, is the characters that God talks about in his word, they're all types and shadows. They're all snapshots of the one true character. Who he's interested, who he's vested everything in, and that's his son. So even when you're in Genesis, he's talking about Adam, but he really has in mind the second Adam, who's Christ. When you get to Abraham, and he talks about the land, and he talks about the lamb, where Isaac, he says, I see the wood, I see the fire. But where's the lamb? And Abraham said, the Lord will provide himself a lamb. Either way you look at it, it's for him. He's saying himself like himself, but he'll say he'll provide himself a lamb. That whatever he needs to the requirement, he'll provide it for him. He'll provide it himself. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, even the 12 tribes of Israel is, we didn't look at that too much. When he appointed the 12 tribes, they had a breastplate that they wore. And you know on that breastplate, there were four rows of jewels or gemstones. We call it the zodiac. Now, we've corrupted it so much, but it was every tribe had a color and a name, and the high priest wore it with the ephod. He wore that, and he had the Urim and the Thummim with it, and every offering, when he went into the tabernacle, guess who he had on his heart? The 12 tribes, all the people. And he offered a sacrifice for himself and for the people. And the high priest... Hebrews says we have a high priest, not like that high priest, and he says he had took on him the infirmities of us all, even though he's mentioning about the Jews, but we know that he's for us. That sacrifice was for us also. So even back then with the high priest, you can see that God had his son in mind. Even the tabernacle. Everything that God does, even the Ark of the Covenant, where he buries the testimony in the Ark with the rod that budded and the manna. Every little, we just read through those things and you see Christ in everything. When they came out of Egypt, he said the rock that they followed, Paul said this, the rock they followed was what?
Christ.
Was Christ. You're like, wow. So you get way over here and you get to Samuel, and even the people were Saul, where they asked for a king, and he said, they haven't rejected me or you, Samuel. They've rejected me that I might not rule over them, the nation. So he takes Saul, and we find out he put Saul on the shelf, and he raises up David. And he says, David is a man after my own heart. And he does something with David where we won't find out. But David, when he talks about it in Matthew, is the son of Abraham, the son of David. And he says, there will come a root out of Jesse. You know who Jesse is, right?
David's father.
And he wasn't talking about David, though. The root out of Jesse is Christ. He's way back here. But he's doing something with David now. We talked about last week. He puts all this energy into talking about Saul and David. But it's not a Saul and David story. There's something behind the scenes that he wants us to look at. And he's preparing the way for the rightful king.
Jesus Christ. Right?
Jesus Christ. So if we read with that in our, maybe in the middle of our mind, because it's hard to put it in the forefront because the story gets, you know, it gets very involved. But he says in Samuel, in 2 Samuel, we saw in 1 Samuel, Saul finally dies. So he's out of the way now. In 2 Samuel, verse 1, says, "Now it came to pass after the death of Saul, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites, and David had abode 2 days in Ziklag. And it came to pass on the third day that, behold, a man came out of the camp from Saul with his clothes rent and earth upon his head. And so it was when he came to David that he fell to the earth and did obeisance." So David has just fought a battle and they're done. And here comes a guy running out of the woods in a fit, you know. So he comes up to David, and David said unto him, "From whence comest thou?" Verse 3. And he said, He says, "Out of the camp of Israel am I escaped." And David said unto him, "How went the matter? I pray thee, tell me." And he answered that the people are fled from the battle, and many of the people also are fallen and dead, and Saul and Jonathan his son are dead also. And David said unto the young man that told him, "How knowest thou that Saul and Jonathan his son be dead?" And the young man that told him said, "As I happened by chance upon Mount Gilboa, behold, Saul leaned upon his spear, and lo, the chariots and horsemen followed hard after him. And when he looked behind him, he saw me and called unto me, and I answered, 'Here am I.' And he said unto me, 'Who art thou?' And I answered him, 'I am an Amalekite.' And he said unto me again, 'Stand, I pray thee, upon me and slay me, for anguish has come upon me because my life is yet whole in me.'" And plenty of words he's saying, "I'm wounded now." He says, "You go ahead and finish the job." What's wrong with that? That's not how it happened. Didn't happen like that. This guy is telling David a lie.
And David knows it.
And David, well, he'll find out. But we know it. Because Saul fell on his spear himself. And because he asked his armor bearer to kill him. He asked his armor bearer, he said, "You finish me off." And his armor bearer said, "I won't do it." So he still respected the office as a king. Isn't that something? Just deviate for a minute here. When I thought about that, I'm not a big politics man, but it amazes me how much disrespect they show to the president. They'll say anything, do anything, and It's unprecedented, is it not?
No, they've done it from the beginning.
It started
after George Washington.
The fact that if you're in a press conference,
yeah,
the only thing I've seen was George Bush got the shoe thrown at him.
Oh, right.
Now that was.
Or it'll stay in the U.S.
But that was a foreigner who did that. But here is you have the president, and this is the constituents who work for the government, right? They represent us. And he gets up and he says, "You lie." But anyway, here's a man we know like David. David respected Saul Because he said this is God's, it's him. This God's man. He's bad, but God will deal with him. Romans 13 says this. The powers that, look at Romans 13. Hold your hand in Samuel. Look at Romans 13. Now I'm not going to. Romans 13.
Thirteen one. Oh, you still looking?
I am. Sorry.
It didn't take me long. Did
you good? You
good?
Better, better,
Frank.
His bookmark was already there.
Is that
my bookmark?
Okay, 13:1. Let every soul, be subject. What does subject mean? Under. Huper. Get under him. That is, you are not subservient, but it's you recognize there's an authority. Right?
Yes, sir.
Let every man be subject. Any word that has sub in it means under, right?
Right.
Okay. Unto the higher powers. For there is no power but of God. God is the one who instituted government to start with. He did that back in Noah's day. Right? He said, you kill, if a man kills a man, you kill that man. You keep this thing in order. So everybody won't do what they want to do in their own sight, what they think is right. There's no power that be. Matter of fact, when Pilate was called Jesus, he said, don't you know that I have the power to crucify you or to let you go? And Jesus said, you're right. You do. He didn't say that. He said, you have no power.
Right.
Except what my Father gives you. And he says, I'll tell you about power. Don't you know I have the power to call 10,000 angels to deliver me?
But he didn't say that to Pilate.
He did say that. He didn't. He said, I can call 10,000. He did say that. And he did say, you have no power. He didn't say it like I'm saying it, but he did say that. But there's no power but what?
Of God.
God's a God. He's a God of order, isn't he? He's a God of authority. That's why. That's what we're talking about now. The whole thing we're talking about is because some thought themselves authority over God, being Satan, adversary. He usurped God's position, God's authority. And he has shown him who the one true authority is. 13:1, there's no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. That doesn't mean he's picking these men. He just put the positions in place. As a matter of fact, even the heavenly powers, where he talks about in Ephesians, that there's principalities, powers, dominions, might, order, rulers. God put them there. He says all things were created by him and for him. All those, whether in heaven or in earth. The positions are made by him to keep order. There's no power that be that are ordained but of or God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God. And they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? He's saying, seeing what they're for, are you not going to respect the power? Are you not afraid? Are you not going to reverence the power that God has put in place? That's what he's saying. We do it all the time. We, well, when I say we, society, is the police. Okay, clear out. I'm not doing anything. I'm not going anywhere. Where did we get so obstinate where now it doesn't matter who you are? And they say, well, they're crooked. So what? God will deal with them. He is the authority. You are supposed to do what he says do.
Well, it's hard to choke down sometimes. I'm not just talking about police. I'm talking about anyone with authority.
That's, but see, that's the thing. It's not our responsibility to, that's why we vote. Render unto Caesar what's Caesar's. That's why we have an opportunity to be a part of the democratic process. And instead of voting on name recognition, we should vote based on the character and the record of the man. If the man is a, you know, he's an abuser of authority, but we like him. So we keep putting them back in and back in and back in. And it's everywhere with every city, every almost every city council. It's a popularity contest. They don't know what the guy believes in. They don't know what he stands for. And he takes the money. He's just like Saul. A bunch of Saulites in office. They take. And they never give. But God says, you just do what I tell you to do. I'll take care of them. There'd be a lot. There'd be some people that are shocked about how God's going to deal with authorities. I don't think we even think about that, where he says, I put this in place and they'll have to answer to me. When they get up there and they put their hand on the book and they say, is it right hand? Is it right hand? Is it, I don't know. Is it right, left hand? And they raise their right hand and they, as the Lord liveth, just like Saul. Yeah. And we found out what that means. He usually holds them to it, doesn't he? And they raise their hand, and I promise to be a servant to the people, to protect, to honor, to serve. And then they turn around and do what?
Start working to get reelected.
Secret Service, everybody from top to bottom. Anyway, do that. He says, wilt thou not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for what?
Good.
But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. He is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore ye must needs be subject. Why, Paul? Not only for wrath, but also for what?
Conscience sake.
What happened to our conscience as citizens, as public servants? It's gone. It's gone. We just don't. The office means nothing. Absolutely nothing. People, it's not even, just watch now, it's not even Senator so-and-so now. It's
first and last name.
Yeah. Not your honor, it's sir. They might say sir. My wife watches tapes Judge Judy sometimes. And if you ever watch Judge Judy, that's a great, I like that. I mean, I watch it sometimes. And they'll be in there and they have no idea about reverence. So they said, were you there? And they'll, yes. Were you there? Yes. Not yes. Yes, your honor. Yes, ma'am. So you have to correct them right there. And it's just people, it's common to them to disrespect.
Right.
It's education. It's with the parents.
So, but anyway, we spent enough on that. But I don't know how it got over there. But here's a man who respected the office of the king, even though he was a corrupt king. Yeah. even though he tried to kill David. If anything warrants
disdain.
Yes, thank you. If anything warrants disdain is a man who tried to kill you and you still recognize him as the authority. Not only that, he was his father-in-law.
And that what happens a lot.
So but for David, it was always the king. He was the king. He was the anointed. He was God's anointed. And he said, look at verse chapter, where are we? Chapter 1, verse 9. He said unto me again, verse 9, stand, I pray thee, upon me and slay me, for anguish has come upon me because my life is yet whole in me. So I stood upon him and slew him because I was sure that he could not live after he was fallen. And I took the crown that was upon his head and the bracelet that was on his arm and have brought them hither unto my Lord. Then David took hold on his clothes and rent them, and likewise all the men that were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted until even for who?
For Saul.
For Saul and for Jonathan his son. And for the people of the Lord and for the house of Israel, because they were fallen by the sword. Now, here's the reaction. You'd think that David would say, oh, finally, I can quit running. This man's been trying to kill me for years. So if I can finally sit back and relax and I can be the king that God has chosen me to be. He didn't say that. He said he rent his clothes and he wept for the man who tried to kill him at every opportunity he had, and for Jonathan, and for the people that fell in war, and for Israel. Verse 13. And David said unto the young man who told him, the young man that told him, whence art thou? Did I read that?
No.
Okay. And the son, and he said, I am the son of a stranger, an Amalekite. And David said unto him, watch this, how wast thou not afraid to stretch forth thine hand to destroy the Lord's anointed? Good question. He says, didn't you know that that was the king? God's man? Why weren't you afraid when you got up and said, you liar? I just threw that in. He respected the authority. The king was the authority. And he says, you weren't afraid to kill the king? He can say that, couldn't he? David had two good opportunities to kill Saul. But he didn't do it. Because even when he cut his skirt in the cave, when he got out, he said what? The scripture said that his heart smote him because he cut his skirt. Even that, he said, this is too much for me to do that. He says, I'm sorry, King. He says, I'm doing this to show you that I could kill you if everybody's saying I'm trying to kill you, but I'm not. I'm just doing this to show you that if I really were after you, I could have done it. But you're God's anointed. You're the king, and I'm respecting that. So he asked this man, he says, how was thou not afraid to stretch forth thy hand to destroy the Lord's anointed? And David called one of the young men and said, go near and fall upon him. And he smote him that he died. And David said unto him, thy blood be upon thy head, for thy mouth have testified against thee, saying, I have slain the Lord's anointed. And David lamented with this lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan his son. Also he bade them teach the children of Judah the use of the bow. Behold, it is written in the book of Jasher. But David said this, In verse 19, the beauty of Israel is slain upon the high places. How are the mighty fallen? Tell it not in Gath. Publish it not in the streets of Ascalon, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph. Ye mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew, let there be rain upon you, neither let there be rain upon you, nor fields or of offerings. For there the shield of the mighty is vilely cast away, the shield of Saul, as though he had not been anointed with oil. So David is praising this man and Jonathan. Does Saul deserve praise for what he did? At least not from David. But he's breaking out and he says, God love you, King. You're a great man. He said the beauty of Israel. And he did nothing but abuse them. But again, it's the office. He's recognizing it. Verse 22, from the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, and the sword of Saul returned not empty. Saul and Jonathan were lovely and pleasant in their lives. Huh? Right. One of them. They were lovely and pleasant in their lives. And in their death, they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. Ye daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothe you in scarlet with other delights, who put on ornaments of gold upon your apparel. How are the mighty fallen in the midst of battle? O Jonathan, thou wast slain in thine high places. I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women. How are the mighty fallen and the weapons of war perished? And most people, I've read some things that they said, well, David was homosexual, him and Jonathan. Well, David had wives and sons, and Jonathan had a son. So that's our base mind. We think like that. We don't think it's possible for a man to love another man with a strong love. Like I have friends in Detroit that I love. I love them, brotherly love. And
you grow up with brothers, you love them.
Yeah.
And that's what and they did. David and Jonathan, they loved each other from the day they met. You ever had a friend like that? You got a friend like that. But this is, I mean, men and women. You might have a girlfriend, and you say, that's just like my sister. And you have a friends who are closer than your own brother, flesh and blood. So why do we think it's strange? Like Paul, he says, this is Luke. He said, the beloved physician. He didn't say, this is Luke, the man that's with me and my companion. He said, this is Luke, the beloved physician. Not just because he was treating Paul with, you know, for the ailments, but I'm sure they developed a bond together. And if you work alongside someone for years, months, and you laboring together for the same thing?
Days is just labor of weeks. That's all, just weeks.
Well,
last months.
The love part is what we're talking about, right?
You're talking about an emotional situation between two people. That,
yeah, just a connection
enjoy
there.
Enjoy each other's company.
Right. So, anyway.
Strictly
platonic, yes.
Yeah.
So, and David, he mourns for Jonathan and for Saul. And now, David comes to the forefront in God's plan. Chapter 2, he says, and it came to pass after this, that David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I go up into any of the cities of Judah? And the Lord said unto him, go up. And David said, whither shall I go up? And he said, unto Hebron. And you got to love that. Even David always, most times, he always asked first. He asked the Lord first. So obviously David's got the ephod with him. He still got the ephod with him. And he says, okay, Lord, should I go up? And he says, yep, go up. And he says, where? I like that. He says, where? He doesn't leave anything to chance. And a great lesson for us. A lot of times I just go.
So he, instead of thinking, I'm just going to go on to Jerusalem.
I'm going to be king. I'm going to be king. It's all done. He says, just because Saul's gone, he says, it may not be God's time yet. And he asks God, he says, God, he says, what, should I go up to the any cities? And he says, okay, go up. And he says, where? And he says, you go to Hebron. And he, even though there's still trouble in there, he goes up, but he inquired of the Lord. And, you know, and I didn't say this the last lessons, but when he had the ephod, and this is pretty much like our ephod, because it tells God's will. And it's God is not, he didn't speak to David like by revelation. He used that ephod that he had, that the priest had. And the word in itself is a very interesting word, but maybe we'll think
what's
about
the
word, that.
Frank?
Ephod.
That word.
Yeah, but
the Bible, basically, is that what you're saying?
It was a Bible before the Bible, right?
Okay.
You know, and God used it various ways to speak, but we're it's a good thing now that He speaks through this. Because you got your own ephod now. You know that? That's you don't have to, you know, go to the pastor and say, what do you think the Lord wants me to do? Or go to the priest and say, what do you think the Lord wants me to do? You can go home when you know right division. You can go home, flip it open, and the Lord will tell you. I'll pull one out for you. He'll say, Lord, I'm going to pick with you. Should I marry this guy? And he says, well, what are you looking for? And you say, if one of his criteria is your criteria, then he'll say, well, you look for that. If he doesn't have that, the magic eight ball says no.
Wait a minute, she can change that, can't she?
Yeah. But we have it.
Yes.
And you don't have to wait for the priest to come up. It just depends on how far you want to go in your instruction. Some of us wish we had an ephod early on in life.
Yeah.
Or if we knew how to access the information. You like to say it was some of those oats we still chew, some of those whole rows we still hoe, some of those beds we still lay in,
reaping,
and some of those seeds we're still reaping. Right? But you can't sit back and just whine about it. You just pick up. That's what grace allows you to do, is you pick up from there, and then you try not to make the same mistake over and over again. Or you go to somebody else and say, let me tell you something. I did it without information. Don't you do it. You don't have to do it. But ultimately, what? It's up to us. When the priest brought the ephod to David, back when he was in Keilah, and he says, are they coming up? And he says, yep. Are they going to turn me over? He says, yep. And David says, well, I'm just going to wait and see what's going to happen. He didn't do that, did he? the scripture said, and David got up and he left. So you don't have to wait to see, you know what? I'm just going to see if it might be different. Even though it's against what the Word of God says, it might be different. It might turn out right. And he says, I won't try that one. I won't test him.
That was intuition. Huh?
Chapter 2, verse 2. So David went up thither, and his two wives also, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess, and Abigail, Nabal's wife, the Carmelite, and his men that were with him, did David bring up, every man with his household, and they dwelt in the cities of Hebron. And the men of Judah came, and there they anointed David king over the house of Judah. And they told David, saying that the men of Jabesh Gilead were they that buried Saul. And David sent messengers unto the men of Jabesh Gilead, and said unto them, Blessed be ye of the Lord, that ye have showed this kindness unto your Lord, even unto Saul, and have buried him. Now, they're still divided. Saul still got his people, that especially those of Jabesh Gilead, because they like Saul. They like the tribe of Benjamin. They were neighbors and they liked them. And David has his men. And so the people come and they says, well, the people from Jabesh Gilead, they took Saul's body down. You remember what the Philistines did to Saul? They cut his head off and they hung his body on the wall. And those men rode and they took that body down. They took it back. They buried him and they burned his body and buried his bones. So they picked him up. They picked the body up. And David says this. He said, Blessed be ye of the Lord, that ye have shown this kindness unto your Lord, even unto Saul, and have buried him. And now the Lord show kindness and truth unto you. And I also will requite you this kindness, because ye have done this thing. Therefore, let your hands be strengthened, and be ye valiant, for your master Saul is dead. And also the house of Judah have anointed me king over them. But Abner, the son of Ner, captain of Saul's host, took Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him over to Manahem, and made him king over Gilead, and over the Asherites, and over Jezreel, and over Ephraim, and over Benjamin, and over all Israel. So here we go. It's the split still there. The split's still there. They've anointed David king. Now here's Saul's general, so to speak. He says, no, you next in line. Saul's son. Now, this is another deal where David, he's got to, what is he going to do here? We should read this story, but I'll talk about it. Where these two factions, they get together and they said, let's have a sporting event. You know, when we were teenagers, we would have block against block football games. And it would be, you know, we're going to play our street, you know, it'd be whatever our street was. We're going to play against this street. Meet us up at the playground, and we get all the people together. And it would be, it's just a game of football. But we were really out to hurt each other. And this is what they did. They says, well, let's have a little sporting out here. Outing here. Verse 13. He says, 14. And Abner said to Joab, "Let the young men now arise and play before us." And Joab said, "Let them arise." Then there arose and went over by number 12 of Benjamin, which pertaineth to Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and 12 of the servants of David. And they caught every one his fellow by the head, and thrust his sword in his fellow's side, so they fell down together. Wherefore that place was called Helkath Hazarim, which is in Gibeon. And there was a very sore battle that day, and Abner was beaten, and the men of Israel before the servants of David. And there were three sons of Zeruiah there, Joab and Abishai and Asahel. And Asahel was light of foot and as a wild roe. These men, anyway, they started off playing, and obviously it got a little excited. And they kill each other. And this man here, he's one of the three brothers here, and they run it off to chase this man. And we won't get into that because it's not really that important. Well, let me rephrase that. That could be it's just a side issue for that, because it's important to God, but that's something you'd have to read on your own time. It's chapter 3. Now there was with all this little faction happened. Now there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. But David waxed stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul waxed weaker and weaker. I wonder whose idea that was. So you know God he's ultimately going to have David where he wants him to be. All right, chapter 3, verse 6. And it came to pass, while there was war between the house of Saul and the house of David, that Abner made himself strong for the house of Saul. And Saul had a concubine. Now, Saul's dead. Okay. Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah. And Ishbosheth said to Abner, "Wherefore hast thou gone in unto my father's concubine?" Now, if we were married and I'm dead, she's free. What's the big deal? But the big deal is this. Ishbosheth he thinks he's king. Abner goes to Saul's concubine, which says, "I'm king." So he says, "Hey, what are you doing? Why'd you go up there?" And he says this, "Then was Abner very wroth for the words of Ishbosheth, and said, Am I a dog's head, which against Judah do show kindness this day unto the house of Saul thy father, to his brethren and to his friends, and have not delivered thee into the hand of David, that thou chargest me today with a fault concerning this woman?" He says, "After all I've done for you, I didn't turn you into David. I've been with your father." And he said, "You're going to ask me about this? About this woman?" He says, "I tell you what I'll do. So do God to Abner and more also, except as the Lord has sworn to David, even so do I to him, to translate the kingdom from the house of Saul, and to set up the throne of David over Israel and over Judah, from Dan even to Beersheba." And he could not answer Abner a word again, because he feared him. So, and Abner's he's a man's man. You know, you're not gonna mess with Abner. We read the past chapters. And he told him, he says, "I'm going to make sure David is king now." And all Ishbosheth could do is listen. Because if you're scared of the man, you're scared of the man. And he was scared of him. And he did. He went down to David. in verse 12, and Abner sent messengers to David on his behalf, saying, "Whose is the land?" Saying also, "Make thy league with me, and behold, my hand shall be with thee to bring about all Israel to thee." And he said, "Well, I will make a league with thee, but one thing I require of thee, that is, that thou shalt not see my face, except thou first bring Michal, Saul's daughter, when thou comest to see my face." David and them women, he's, that's, but, you know, Saul had promised her to David, and he went back on his word. And she loved David, and David loved her. And you know what? Go give me that woman. He said, "You bring her back.
You my man.
And he brought her back. And David sent messengers to Ishbosheth, Saul's son, saying, "Deliver me my wife, Michal, which I espoused to me for 100 foreskins of the Philistines." And Ishbosheth sent and took her from her husband, even from Phaltiel, the son of Laish. And her husband went, this, I actually laughed when I saw this. And her husband went with her along, weeping behind her to Bahurim. Then said Abner unto him, "Go home." "Go home." And he returned. He must have really loved her, didn't he? That's sad, isn't it? But, you know what they say?
What goes around comes around.
I tell you what shocks me a little bit is that, you know, they used to trade 5 cows for a woman. David gave 100 foreskins of the foreskins.
Right. You know what?
What's foreskins?
That is, you know, like when they circumcise the male child.
Oh my God, I love
that. Now, but there's,
I didn't know what that meant.
You know what? There's a lesson there.
Yes.
There's a lesson. No, really. Yeah. When David does that, you remember we had the lesson on circumcision? What it meant? It meant death to the flesh. It meant that the power that you are exerting is not as powerful as the power that I have. Like when God told Abraham to circumcise, this is a covenant, he's telling Abraham that you can't do this in your own strength. You can't get it done. I have to get it done. So when David, Saul asked for the foreskins of the Philistines, he's showing them who's boss.
Well, he sure did.
He said, "We are stronger than you." Samson did it. Did he not? Samson did it. And here, David did it. Saul said, "I just need 100. That's what, no, Saul said, "You give me 100. And David went and got 200. He says, if that's all you require," and he's showing, number one, his strength and his loyalty to the king. And how much stronger he was. What he said to Goliath, he says, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the Lord?" See, we don't, if we get the lesson of the word, then we get what God is, when he's saying things like this, it's not just, you know, like you look at it and you say, "Wow, there's something behind the scenes that God is God." And he is stronger than the gods of the Philistines and the Philistines. And these people, we trust in God, not in our armies. Right? Well, they did. And that's why, well, Paul said this. We're the circumcision. We are believers, which worship God in what? Spirit. And have no confidence in the flesh. So you're saying we're uncircumcised, or we were, but now we're circumcised. That is, I'm not trusting in the old. What's your real name? Olivia?
Libby?
It's Libby. We're not trusting, she's not trusting in the old Libby who would try to do it in her own strength. Or the old Ron, or the old Frank, or the old Ed, or we're not trusting in our strength. We're trusting in what he did. So we become the circumcision where we've cut ourselves off from trying to do it on our own. Well, he's cut us off. He's cut us off from that trying to do it on our own.
The circumcision without hands.
The circumcision without hands. In the putting off of the body of the sins of the flesh. And sins are not always bad things. Sin could be, like you said, the knowledge of good and evil. Sin could be thinking that you can do it on your own.
So that's why they whacked that thing off, huh?
That's why they...
For the sinful nature.
Cut around that, yes. Circumcision cut. They just
a good thing they cut around. They're out of the womb.
So... that's it's 7:05, so we'll probably stop there.
You think about that all
since Frank is done.
Well, I didn't know what those skins were, so now I do.
We'll stop there and pick it up next time.